Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the call. It's 7 o'clock on Tuesday evening. This is our celebration of life. It's great to have you with us. We would like to welcome, first of all those who are with us for the first time as guests this evening. Oh, you picked a great night to be here. Tonight we're going to take on the topic of self-esteem. Now, the way this works, we have everybody on mute, and if you would like to participate, just press *6 and call out my name, Dave. When I recognize you, you'll know that I can hear you, and then you can ask a question or make a comment along the way, because this coaching session is for you. I want to make it as personal as we possibly can. I want to speak to each one of you individually and see what we can do tonight to serve you in taking on this issue of self-esteem so that we can be whole and complete and real and genuine and authentic, available to serve others and to enjoy a wonderful and abundant life. Well, it's great to be with you. We welcome you all. A couple of things that may be helpful. We invite all of you to take an assessment at intentionalcreation.com or one of the links that you receive from your affiliate or a coach to take that assessment and take your time when you take it. You'll rank words or phrases on two different worksheets. Just know that behind this process, which is very simple, there's a very complex mathematical model, and it is measuring the way in which you think. Not what you think, but how you think. Now, you're not your thoughts. These are just thoughts. These are just habits of thinking that we've accumulated over our lifetime, and sometimes we do let them run our lives. There's no question about that. But we want to be able to see how they're showing up. Because in today's world, we do not have a minute to spare. By that I mean, we don't have a minute to spare. We don't have time to spend in catastrophe, in despair, in frustration and overwhelm, in self-doubt and fear. There's not a moment. It's imperative that for us to be successful in this current economic condition, that we absolutely be in control of our thoughts, that despite the firestorms that might be raging around us, we're okay. We call that sucks. Yeah, that sucks. It sucks out my energy, my enthusiasm, or my desire for living. That sucks, but I'm okay. And being okay, in spite of all of this that's going on around me, much of which is not my doing. I didn't drop the value of my home below my mortgage if somebody's struggling with that issue. You did not cause your employer to go out of business or to cause layoffs. These are things that are happening to so many. It's pandemic and it's categorical, which means it's widespread and almost everybody's experiencing. I have found very few who are exempt from the challenges of today. But in spite of those challenges, if we choose to be okay, to be whole and healthy, we can do two things. One, we can make the most out of what we've been given. And two, we can see the opportunities, even if they are limited. It used to be that all we had to do is help someone get out of their own way, and then they could show up, an opportunity just abounded everywhere. It was just wonderful. That's not necessarily true today. However, when we show up okay, we can make the most out of what we've been given. We can know that if we follow these principles, these six qualities of an intentional creator, and we focus on connecting with other people, in partnership with a power greater than ourselves to bless the lives of others. We use our mind constructively to get inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems that ignite our passion. We bring that passion to here and now, and we start executing on those things. We have discipline and structure. We find joy in the journey in spite of these firestorms. And our health, our self-esteem is healthy. When we can do this, now we can create, and we can know. If we did this for 200 days, just woke up in the morning and took life on, we would know 200 days from now a great, great thing. We would know that no matter no matter what happened. It is the best that it can be. Does that mean you might still be in the same house, have the same job, drive the same car? Maybe not. Perhaps yes. Perhaps better. But wherever you are, it's the best that it can be. And you can know it in your heart and have peace of mind that that's the truth. That is going to be an extremely valuable asset moving forward through this economic crisis that we're currently experiencing. We don't do this. We're always going to wonder. We're going to live in resentment and frustration and anger and overwhelm. We're going to blow our relationships apart. We're going to lose our jobs. We're going to create self-fulfilling prophecies. We're going to torment ourselves over things that may never come to pass and do it long enough they actually do come to pass. So we're going to want to embrace these principles so that we can show up in life. This morning I got up very early, which has been a pattern for the last couple of weeks. And I was sitting right here in this chair this morning in my office here at my home. And I was pondering today. And I caught myself right in the middle of these principles. A couple of weeks ago, those who were on the call, we taught you how to be present in the now. Effort, discipline, and focus, and action based on the passion that you created. And I was reflecting on my vision. What's my vision? I'm very excited about it. And based on that very clear vision, I could feel my passion being reunited and reignited. And focusing on the day. Now, this is what we teach people to do. I wanted to share it with you so you know these aren't just theories. These are things we implement in our lives to create the success and abundance that exists. As I'm reflecting on this day, I was picking my power sessions. Those of you who were here a couple weeks ago, you know what a power session is, when a person fully shows up in an event. And it turned out I had four of them today, a coaching session at 8, a coaching session at 11, a very important meeting this afternoon with an executive of one of the largest home furnishing companies in the country, and then a brief conversation with a coaching client, and this evening, this session right now. Now, we teach people to pick those events, and once they're picked, we write them down. I've got them right here in my journal, those four events. Now, we begin the process of mentally rehearsing. What can I create? How can I create it? How will this serve? And so you know this has everything to do with self-esteem. Thought about the 8 o'clock coaching session with Russ Palmer. Russ is one of our coaches, and we're coaching together on some things. Got into his coaching session, began to listen, heard a door, stepped through it. Russ gave me one of the greatest gifts I've had in the last week. Spontaneously, he started sharing some of his feelings about the very principle of what can I create, how can I create it, how will I serve, and a graph that he'd been envisioning in his mind, which is going to become part of the practicum. When we got done with the coaching session, which I'm supposed to be the coach, I thanked him for the gift. I was so grateful I showed up. 11 o'clock. Powerful human being who doesn't know just how powerful he really is. Oh, did we have an opportunity to talk about that today? To say some things he needed to know. Great gifts. 2 o'clock, wonderful meeting this afternoon, and here we are. And I found myself reflecting on all of you this evening and went to a couple of places regarding self-esteem that I'm not sure I've ever verbalized on one of these calls. As many times as we've cycled through the 6 qualities of an intentional creator, which we do about every 9 or 10 weeks, we've been doing this well over a year now, I don't know that we've ever gone here before. And I got so carried away, I was actually a few minutes late for my 8 o'clock coaching session by the time I got to the office this morning. I am hoping that I can share with you the experience I had sitting here in this chair this morning, reflecting on each one of you. That we can go somewhere in this discussion of self-esteem to give you some very specific assistance, some practices to assist you in healing self-esteem. You know, it's just, you can just feel it. There is somebody there tonight who needs to know what I'm about to share with you. I could feel it this morning. It was just a tender moment. So I'm going to jump right into it. I've asked Ramona to be on the line with me tonight. Are you here, sweetheart? I know she's up because we have guests here in our family room and they're fixing dinner and cooking, and we found out we were out of propane just a few minutes before the event began, so she may be rushing to get those things handled, but I'm sure she'll be with us shortly. Here we go. We know that the three primary causes of challenges in self-esteem come from, the most common, is unmet expectations, which we'll talk about last today. The second is when we have a difference, a gap, between the person we present to the world, our public image, and what is going on in our life in the secret. If there is a big difference between those two, we can create a self-esteem crisis. We don't know which one we are. And three, what I would call damage to the fragile underpinnings of trust. Now, we've talked in the past of some of the most common kinds of damages that can occur, things like emotional or sexual child abuse when we're children, or being in an abusive relationship as an adult, just devastating to self-esteem. I had just the most tender conversation with a friend this week, a new friend. I was talking about being in a marriage for 30 years. Husband unfaithful for 2 decades, breaking that family apart. She was so gracious and so forgiving. She also shared that when that was happening, it was devastating to her self-esteem. And she gave me a perspective unlike I've ever internalized. I've heard the words before. I've just never felt it at this level. Because we were talking that morning, I won't go into more detail than that, other than to say that if there's anyone on this call tonight who is going through that kind of a situation, one, if you're in an abusive relationship, I encourage you to get some assistance. I am not a therapist. I'm a coach. I can help you once you're past getting out of that kind of a relationship, but if you're in one, get some assistance from a professional counselor, ecclesiastical leader, a pastor, a bishop, someone that can assist you in working through that process. You do not and should not do this on your own. You've got all kinds of questions, I'm sure, about, with David, I've got children, how do I support them? I don't know how I'm going to survive. That's why it's so essential you don't try to do this on your own. Find a professional who can give you some assistance. And we'll go into more detail on this in a moment. Where we're going to go tonight on this topic, I want to start with the men first. There is something I got so in touch with this last Friday night. I went on a camp out with my son and our 2 grandsons, his 2 children. What a precious moment. I mentioned on my Facebook this morning that we're lying there in the tent, and the lights were out, and we're listening to the river, you know, just a few feet from the tent, and everybody's just lying there, it's dead silent, and little Jameson, little 4-year-old Jameson says, "Grandpa, I love you." Just melted my heart. The whole occasion was worth it, although we're sleeping on ground so hard that, you know, a couple of foam pads didn't even begin to do it justice. But lying in bed that night, I was reflecting on this very topic that I'm going to share with you, and felt it so deeply, and felt so impressed to share it with you tonight, speaking to the men first. Men, One of the great challenges in self-esteem often comes from our relationship with our own fathers. I've coached with many men, and can do so from my own life experience of wanting a father to show up differently than he did when I was a child. Ramon and I watched a movie the other night called The Dear John. There's a scene where this young man's father is passing away, a father who had suffered from autism. And in the very end, the son was able to finally say to the father what he wanted to say. And the father was able, as he's lying on this gurney ready to die, hold the son. Hold him. Just hold him. I don't know a man who doesn't ache for that moment. Except for the very, very few who were blessed with that kind of relationship when they were growing up. Very, very rare. Most men have spent a lifetime waiting for their dads to finally show up. I had that experience when I was 52 years old. And it came because instead of waiting for my dad to show up, I showed up for my dad. I just accepted him for who he was, went to visit him, spent a few days with him, listened to him, found out things about him I didn't know, to my shame. When it came time to leave, I gave him a hug like I always give him, and he gives me kind of that cordial hug too. But he held me just a little bit longer. I could feel him just hanging on. And I looked up at him, and he had tears streaming down his cheeks, down his eyes and dripping off his cheeks. And he told me that he loved me, and he was going to miss me. I wanted to bawl for a week. For 52 years, I'd waited for that moment. How many on this phone, men, have waited for their dads to show up? Well, here's the truth. For those of you who are young and have small children, don't wait till you're 52. Because what will happen while you're waiting for that to happen, which may or may never happen, you're going to be raising a generation of children who are longing for the same thing. Because your focus is on your need. And not the need of your children. I feel I was probably guilty of that. If you're a little bit older, take a look at your children. If they have children or if they have grandchildren, just examine, have I been, while I've been waiting for this acceptance, have I become that very person myself, leaving people waiting for my acceptance? Your very first assignment, if you're older, is to schedule time with your sons where you can just be with them and at some point in time just put your arms around them and hug them and hold them and tell them. Don't be ashamed of this. Tell them how much you love them. No matter where they've been or what they've done, unconditional fatherly love, no judgment. You love them. Let them go to sleep that night feeling really, truly loved. Now, you may be doing this already. Keep doing it. If you're a young father, here's the message to every father who can still influence a child. Today, make the decision that you're going to become the father you have always wanted. You are going to become the father you have always wanted. It is a great healer of self-esteem when we shift from our need to filling the need of another. I had such a warm feeling flood over me when little Jameson made that comment, lying in that tent as it was cold up in the mountains last Friday night. Oh, to be there with my son sitting next to the campfire, and the boys had gone to sleep, to just be there together. So proud of him. We had a chance while we're driving in the car to talk about how proud I was of him. To say the things to him that I always wanted my father to say to me, which he now says, but never did until I was 52. He still harbored some of his frustrations for me when I was a teenager. I was a hellion. And for years, he kept reminding me of the pain that I caused. Don't be that father. Be the unconditional father starting today. Do not let another generation grow up wondering, longing for. Because in truth, this goes even deeper. That which we project on our father, our earthly father, we often project on God. That power, whatever you want to call it, whatever your conception is of it, whatever that is, we project on that power. It's judgmental, or it abandons us, or it doesn't love us, or it doesn't recognize us, or it doesn't listen to us. We often project on that power the very thing we project on our fathers, or those things we felt from our own fathers. Starting tonight, I want you to know unequivocally that that power is unconditional. Tender mercies, slow to anger, gracious, kind, full of mercy. That's that power. Assign it whatever visual you want, whatever source you want. Just know that is how it functions. And when we turn our thoughts to becoming the fathers we've always wanted our fathers to be, we become partners with that power in blessing the children of this earth. And we begin to heal. We begin to know, and we begin to know that we are known. So men, let's decide tonight, if you've been waiting for a father to show up, stop waiting. Do your best to show up for that father if he's still alive. Accepting him for whoever he is, limitations, whatever. Just love him for, he did the best he could with what he had. That's it. And stop wanting him to be something he's not. And you start becoming the person your children need. Be that person. Focus on them. Watch them. Listen to them. Step into their world. That's for the men. Ramona, have you joined me? Hopefully she will before we get too much farther. For the women, very interesting experiences. In our fashion-conscious world, there is such tremendous pressure on women to look a certain way. And we can have a great deal of impact, how we view ourselves has a great deal of impact on our self-esteem. Now, we happen to have a lady here in my home, amazing human being, who's lost 130 pounds. She didn't do so with a surgery or a crazy diet. She just took on her life. She was a food addict. She'd tell you that straight up. But she took on her own challenge and overcame it. I am 30 pounds overweight. I lost 30 so we could run the triathlon. Almost killed me, but I made it. There'll be another 30 that'll come off this year. Wouldn't that be exciting? Yeah, I didn't get here in a year, but it's going to take a year to get it back under control. That's the truth. I am overweight. I can look in the mirror and I can see this, and I can get discouraged and beat myself up, or I can step back and say, that's not how I really feel about me. That's how I'm looking, and I will do the piece that I have control over, as Becky did. The part she has control over, so that she could be healthy. She just didn't want to die. She wanted to live. So if we look at ourselves, ladies, not everybody can be 5'8 and 115 pounds and anorexic. Besides that, it's not healthy.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, sweetheart.
Were you describing me?
Not the anorexic part.
The 5'8 part was right, but that was about it.
I'm so glad you joined us.
Oh, I'm
because
happy
it would
to
be really awkward for me to have this conversation for the women. But this piece, in terms of fragile underpinnings, body has a big piece to do with this. Can you help me out here, sweetheart, in talking to the ladies in terms of finding peace with what is?
Wow. You know, I think all the women know exactly what you're talking about. It's the solution that seems to elude, at least eludes me quite often. You know, I even remember doing the mind game that I can tell myself, but do I really believe it, that it's not about how you look, it's about what's inside. But there are those days when you just, I don't feel that way. But I think that's the key, is to be able to understand that's all the outside trapping. That's what the world is putting out there in judgment and to keep women small. And so I think it's so important to get in touch with what really makes a person whole and complete. I know there's somebody here in the audience who could address this at a deep, deep level. And that would be Becky. She's really gone through a huge transformation and really made these principles a part of her life and her being.
She said to me tonight, sweetheart, she said she was putting together her dinner, and it was a very healthy chicken and salad and some wonderful things, and she was down here in the kitchen, the family room, fixing it, and she was talking about the principles. She said, you know, Dave, what I realized, and it was a little bit of what attracted her to the Ogmandino principles, is she discovered that this is what she'd been living. She'd been living these principles.
Wow.
Isn't that kind of fun?
That's incredible.
So can we encourage those to do what they can and do? And you and I talked about this earlier in the day, and this is such a tender piece. We know that I'm not responsible for your happiness, nor are you responsible necessarily for mine, in the sense of it's my choice to be happy. But what can a husband do, or a boyfriend, or a significant other in a relationship, what can they do to create a safe place for a woman to work through these issues that are going to be there? They're just going to be there. These body issues of hair or weight or height or shape, those are going to just be there. What could a husband or a boyfriend or a significant other do to help support someone when they're having one of those days?
You know, I think the key to that is it's not anything that they can say, because it's like it doesn't matter what they say. It's too difficult to say the right thing, and I don't think a man can necessarily say the right thing, but it certainly is the actions, the consistency, the putting your arm around her or listening intently, understanding without trying to fix the moment, but just listening and letting her vent and share those feelings and just being there supportive, you know, not discounting what she's feeling, but, you know, understanding that this is one of those moments.
You're doing great. Anything else you want to say about that?
You know, I think women have, and you know, it's interesting if I could be so bold as to share, one of our children have had infertility problems, and in the quest to find the problem, our son was required to take some hormone replacement. And this is a very, very mild-mannered son, and when he was on these hormones, he actually got a little snippy, it was reported. And I think for men to understand that women are just a mixer full of hormones that fluctuate, and so often it just requires time for the body to readjust or to go through the cycle or whatever, and that's so important to create that safe place. I love Ogg's principle in, I believe it's Scroll 5, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, about this too shall pass. And that kind of patience and understanding is so important when having a close relationship with a woman, to know that she, in another day or so, she may feel differently, and this too shall pass. And to be patient and be supportive in the moment, in that period of time.
So, man, we can't make a woman happy, but we can create a safe place for them to be. And there will be times when they just have to deal with whatever it is that they're dealing with. And that's probably the times when we need to show up the best. Just loving and caring. I love what you said, Ramona, listening, you know, stepping into their world, holding them, making sure that those intimacies in our lives stay alive. And that's not always sexual intimacy. That can be as simple as opening a door, coming back out of the garage in the morning and just holding her for a little longer and telling her how beautiful she is and how much you love her. Just those little moments to add a little extra. Thank you so much, honey.
Oh, thank you.
You'll stay with us because we may call on you a little bit more.
Okay.
So in terms of fragile underpinnings, those of you who have struggled from actual abusive situations, and I've been pretty open. When you talk about connecting with people and we talk about empathy and intuition, I share the Chicago dream. You know that between the ages of 2 and 4, I was put in the care of a pedophile. That has been a lifelong project. When those fragile underpinnings of childhood are disturbed, it takes a long time to get that put back together. And if you're in a relationship and someone's been through that, just know that if you can love them more than you love yourself, if you can show up for them and give them a safe place to take on and deal with these issues, that there will be just wonderful rewards in a relationship. And if we are selfish and we want them to show up a certain way and we want to fix them in that moment, that's going to be a challenge. And if someone needs a professional help, let's make sure that they get what they need to process through those very traumatic things that occur in our lives. But at that same level, men, stop waiting for your dad. Tonight we're going to start becoming the fathers that we always want our dads to be. So we don't raise a generation of children who are then feeling like we have felt. Now, I love my dad. My dad was a great man, a hardworking man. He grew up in a really difficult family and had his own stuff to deal with. I can love him now because I see him more clearly now. But there were years that I was terribly resentful. Many of you have been too. Tonight, just know that's normal. That happens for men. But just let it go and start showing up for your children and your grandchildren. If we've had these tragedies in our life or these frustrations in our life, the greatest single question that we can ask is this: I wonder if. Let's write that down on a piece of paper. I wonder if, which means I wonder if anyone else has had this experience. Ladies, if you're struggling with body images, I wonder if anyone else feels this way. Almost everyone. and they don't feel understood. This is the great part of empathy and intuition, to be able to step into someone's world and know and ask the questions nobody else would want to ask, because you know. Other people know them, but they're still dragging their experiences around in that sack. You're saying, I wonder if. And frankly, our prayers and our hearts go out to those who have been in abusive relationships. May you find peace with us. May you find men who are respectful of women and honor your womanhood and your divinity. May you finally feel valued for what you are. Powerful, beautiful, incredible. Now the second piece. Some of us have a very different persona from our secret selves. We've had an opportunity to do some work in alcohol recovery areas. And that would be an example. If someone is privately struggling with alcoholism, but in the world they're presenting a different facade, or if someone's struggling with pornography addiction, that would be another example. Sometimes it's anger addictions. It can be, you want the public to think that you're serene and put together, and you come home and yell and scream and holler and carry on. That's a very different thing. That creates a real challenge in self-esteem, because we're not sure which one we are. Are we the kind, gentle one? Or are we the screamer, the abuser? Here's the secret tonight. You're not either one of them. You're the one who stepped back here looking at these two going, which one am I? I am not either one of them. I'm beyond these. And we begin to be more transparent. Seek assistance if you've got an addiction from a professional who can assist you. Don't try to pretend anymore or try to impress someone to make up for the difference. We'll end up experiencing what's called shame. Now, the difference between guilt and shame, guilt is I feel bad about what I've done. Shame is I feel bad about who I am. Shame comes from the root word sham, which means a covering, like a pillow sham. It covers us, and when it covers us, it covers our natural genius. We don't get to show up because we're preoccupied by the shame. And lastly, and the most common, is unmet expectations. And this one is killing people today. This one is just crushing us. Because we've got a dream. We've got a vision in our mind of how it ought to look. And for almost everyone, it's showing up differently. We don't like it. We don't want it to be that way. We're in resistance and resentment to it. And when we are in that kind of space, we've got this expectation, we're frustrated. It's supposed to be easier by now. It's supposed to be farther ahead by now. We're supposed to be happier by now. It's supposed to be easier by now. It's not supposed to... When we're in that space, it is human nature to turn the blame to ourselves. And there are three specific places that we go. One, we start questioning our own belief systems. And I remember that moment in time. I remember being so angry that it wasn't turning out the way I wanted it. This was 1988 and 89. We had lost everything. $1 million strapped to our back. Millions of dollars gone. The house was gone. The 40-foot custom Bluebird was gone. The Ferrari's gone. The Mercedes was gone. The housekeeper was gone. The gardener was gone. The tennis coach was gone. We had a great life. It was gone. This can't be. And there weren't answers coming, and there weren't solutions coming, and there was overwhelm because life kept showing up different than I had expected it to. And I had reason to expect it too. We'd been enjoying it that way for a long time. And one night, I remember sitting in a peach-colored chair in our master bedroom, and saying aloud with anger, I long to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must change my God or change my cry. What I discovered. And Og speaks to it brilliantly in scroll number 10. He tells us to seek guidance. That there are certain prayers that don't get answered by any power. He said, never will I pray for the material things of the world. I'm not calling to a servant to bring me food. I'm not ordering an innkeeper to provide me with a room. We could add to that, I'm not asking for this person to save me from my financial challenges. Never will I seek delivery of gold, love, good health, petty victories, fame, success, or happiness. Only for guidance will I pray that I may be shown the way to acquire these things. That prayer will always be answered. Then later he says, I seek not for this gold or garments, but instead to acquire the ability equal to the opportunity. I'm not going to ask for the opportunity. I'm going to seek for the ability, because when I gain the ability, the opportunity will automatically present itself. Well, in that anger, and through what was a 10 years of hell, not all of it, but the least first 4 years were awful, learned a great secret, that when we acquire ability, God does open up the doors of opportunity, and then we do the work. He doesn't do the work. We do the work. What I learned in the end was a very simple message. David, you must change your cry. If you've got a belief system, and you believe there's a God, there's a power greater than yourself, and things aren't going the way you would like them to, and you start to beat yourself up and question your beliefs, don't take that one off the shelf. Just change the way you've been trying to get answers. Start using your mind constructively, quality number two. Mentally rehearse, seek inspiration, explore, plan, goal set, problem solve, and you'll begin to receive inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems that will ignite your passion, and passion will drive your action. It's a very simple principle, but yet most of us, when we get into that space, we want to be rescued, and so we start questioning our belief systems. The next thing we start questioning is our ability. I'm not smart enough, I'm not young enough, I'm not educated enough, I don't have enough money. My favorite one that I've heard me say 100 times is I didn't get to inherit a company like he did. Doesn't it just tick you off that so-and-so had a rich dad who built a business and turned it over to them, and they just took it over and made it work? They didn't have to create it from the ground up. How many of you on the phone have been like me? Everything you have had to be created from the ground up. It's hardly fair, right? That's just an unbalanced, unhealthy thought process. This isn't a competition with a friend or a neighbor or some other person. This is your laboratory to learn how to become a creator. What a blessing. What a blessing. But yet we start to question our ability, our circumstances, our skill sets, our opportunities we've been given or not given. And that noise in our head robs us from showing up and actually creating something magnificent. We get sucked into the drama of that dilemma. Now, the most critical thing we question is our own worth. We actually start to wonder if we are worthy. And then we start to wonder if we're even loved. And we're back full circle to the beginning of this conversation as it related to fathers. Because if we didn't feel that from our father, we most likely are not going to feel it from our God. And when our expectations are unmet, and we feel resistance and resentment for what's happening in our lives, done some things in our lives that aren't very pretty. My teenage years were really brutal. Oh, that I could take half of that back. Can't. But we can use it in the service of others. The parent who's raising a teenager who knows what hell is like, if they own their experience, can use it intuitively to guide a child unlike almost anyone. They know what it's like to be there. They know what it felt like. They know how they got into that situation, and they are perfectly prepared to guide a teenager through those challenges, or a grandchild. Value your experiences. They are unique to you, and you have been so beautifully prepared for this moment in time. This I want to share with you, so you understand it very clearly. I can have everybody just press *6 if you would. We have somebody who's off mute, and we're getting a lot of noise in the background. Can everybody just press *6 for a moment, please? Okay, I'm just going to mute the whole call just for a moment so we can have that really quiet. I really feel strongly about what I'm about to share with you. And that is that we're living in a very interesting time. It's just getting started. I started this call with, we don't have a moment to waste. If we do, the place we're going to take the biggest hit is in our own self-esteem. Because when challenges come and we are not prepared, we will beat ourselves up first. If we can consciously make the decision to become the father that we always wanted our father to be, if we can clearly see if other people are struggling as we are struggling, if we can create safe places for those who might be dealing with body issues to work through and deal with the hormones and all the stuff that can happen, be loving and supporting. If we can be the person who's going through that and focus on another person who may be struggling and show up in service to them. If we can own our own challenges, we'll never forget what we've done. Don't try to. That's a frustration. Own them in your heart and show up to serve another person so that there will be purpose in your suffering and joy in this journey and much healing in your souls. If you can do this, then you can start to heal your self-esteem. The objective is to be real and genuine and authentic. Real means to have relationships. That's quality one. We get to start on this next week. Can't wait to all those on the call. Next week we're going to take on connecting with people, being real, and stepping into people's worlds and taking down their walls of resistance and creating a safe place and that deep, rich connection. Two, we want to be authentic, anthosectic. We want to act on our own moral authority, doing the next right thing for the right reason. Because we want to. Because we get to. Because we choose to. We have a clear vision. We've received inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems. They've ignited our passion. And from inside our very soul, we're driven to take the action necessary to bring them into tangible reality. That's being authentic. And being genuine comes from the root word genus, which is our genius. We fully embrace our gifts. That's not being egotistical. That's being whole and complete. That's honoring both the gift and the giver. That's bringing all of that to the table in the service of other people. Real, genuine, authentic, without the need to impress That's taking what we have and making a big deal about it so we feel better about ourselves. Pretend. Act like we have something we don't. Shame. Feel bad about ourselves in fear. That paralyzing thing that can cripple us. Instead of having those things, we want to be real, genuine, and authentic. Dr. Hartman, who did the mathematics on our assessment, said this is the highest level of maturity, being real and genuine and authentic, comfortable in our own skin. That's the objective. This is where we want to be. Now, three more things, and we'll be done. I'll give you some specifics in terms of fathers and other issues. When you come next week and begin the process of connecting with people, and you start working in partnership with a power greater than yourself in the service of another human being, bringing your life experience to bear to more effectively connect, that will be one of the greatest ways to heal self-esteem. So now we know what caused it, unmet expectations, destroying those fragile underpinnings of trust or inconsistencies between what we project to the public and secretly who we are. The way to begin the healing at a deep, deep level is to come and master the quality of connecting with people. That's the first piece. The second one will come immediately after that. We'll begin to use our mind constructively. Instead of going into fantasy, skipping ahead to a time when we're rich and living in that time period somehow, skipping everything between here and there, in catastrophe and overwhelm or counterfeit pleasure, we're going to learn those five constructive ways of using our mind. And when we start receiving inspired ideas, it's waking up. A week ago last Monday at 1:36, and something I've been trying to understand just came down into the office and wrote for 6 hours, and it was there. Boom. I felt so connected in that moment, so understood, so valued. I knew, trusted, and could be trusted. That heals self-esteem. Then when we get this passion ignited, the next time after that we'll take on completing tasks, we'll learn how to live in the now, passion-driven action. Instead of procrastinating, we'll be fully using our gifts, and when we do and we need more, we're endowed with more ability. Oh, that's a wonderful moment for self-esteem. Then people are put on our path that we can serve and who can serve us miraculously. Oh, it starts to heal self-esteem. The next 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to go into very specific principles and practices. I gave you a couple tonight. But we're going to spend the next 3 weeks doing the exact qualities that will begin the process of healing self-esteem. I want to close with Og Mandino. Og, in scroll number 4, shared some things with us. I have a painting upstairs that just speaks to this. Within me burns a flame which has been passed from generations uncounted. Its heat is a constant irritation to my spirit to become better than I am, and I will. I will fan this flame of dissatisfaction and proclaim my uniqueness to the world. It's interesting. We want to be unique, but we all want to look alike. What is unique about you? Proclaim it to the world. He goes on to say after that, I will place my uniqueness on display in the marketplace. I will proclaim it. Yea, I will sell it. I'll begin now to accent my differences, hide my similarities. I tease the teenagers around here because they all want to be unique. So they all dress in black and have an earring. It doesn't make sense to me. There's nothing unique about that. What is unique about us? What is unique about our experience? What have we learned through the trials of our lives? Not necessarily the education formal that we got, the trials of our lives that has uniquely prepared us for this very moment in time. And then he goes on to say this, never more will I be satisfied with yesterday's accomplishments. Nor will I indulge any more in self-praise for deeds which in reality are too small to even acknowledge. I can accomplish far more than I have, and I will. For why should the miracle which produced me end with my birth? Why can I not extend that miracle to my deeds of today? Gosh, I just had an emotional moment. Because this is the message. For those of you who are in such challenges right now, that is creating such frustration and then such self-doubt, I am not on this earth by chance. You're not. You are here for a purpose. And that purpose is to grow into a mountain, not to shrink into a grain of sand. Henceforth, apply all your efforts to become the highest mountain and strain your potential until it cries for mercy. Next week, we'll talk about connecting with people, then using your mind constructively, and then being present in the now, so that you can get your mind off the expectations that are unmet, the frustration in your life, and the self-blame. The number one cause of self-esteem challenges. Know that wherever you've been, whatever you've done, you are loved unconditionally. Uniquely prepared. If you will focus on this with us for the next few weeks and begin to heal your self-esteem, you will show up differently than you ever have before. With a joy you have never known before. Your desire to face the world will overcome every fear you once had at sunrise, and you'll be more happy than you ever imagined possible in this life of strife and sorrow. Our promises. Thank you. Let's take this on. Our very lives depend on it. And as importantly, in the weeks and months to come, there will be people in such pain that you'll look back with gratitude and say, if I had not experienced what I experienced, I would not be able to serve them at this level. There will be joy in your journey. There'll finally be purpose in your suffering. And much healing in your souls. We thank you for being with us tonight. We invite you to be back with us next night, next Tuesday night, excuse me. We're going to be leaving this call in just a moment and going on to our affiliate call. Those who bring these principles into their lives often want to share them with others. And we have a program whereby somebody can do that and be handsomely rewarded financially. So if you would like to create some additional revenue, this isn't network marketing or direct selling, this is an affiliate program. If it would be of interest to you to create that kind of additional revenue and you love the principles or you've appreciated what you've heard tonight, join us on the affiliate call here in just a couple of minutes. That phone number is 213-417-2120. That's 213-417-2120. And the access code is 366-398 pound. 366-398 pound. And last in closing, I want those who are in the Salt Lake area to start planning for October 8th. We're going to have a date night. And Ramona, who is just delightful and funny as heck. We were lying in bed last night talking about something. We laughed so hard. If I'd have been drinking milk, it would have come out my nose. She is just so spontaneously wonderful. We're going to come and talk about how to create a loving and lasting relationship, commitment and trust and intimacy. It is cheaper than a movie and dinner. Come with us for a couple of hours and let's take on relationships. If you're married, or if you're single and want to have a relationship, the girls in the office said, bring a wingman. I'm not sure what that means, but if you're single, probably you do. If you're in a committed relationship, bring your committed companion with you. Let's take on relationships so that we can start building society from our homes outward. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night. We look forward to having you back with us next week when we take on mastering connection with people. Thanks, everybody, and good night.